You are listening to the United States of Football Show, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily. The United States of Football Show welcomes the new year. Welcome to you. It is 2014. Robert Hay is on the other end. My name is Earl Reed, and we are recording on January 8th. That's Wednesday evening. And Robert, how has your new year started? How's the holidays been?
Well, the holidays have been, you know, fun, nice, relaxing. We're going through the polar vortex right now in D.C., as I'm sure you are, Earl, up in your neck of the woods. So we're going through a thaw. So by the time people hear this, there will be reasonable temperatures throughout the United States, or at least in the parts where there should be reasonable temperatures. So thankfully, I had a lot of soccer to watch over the break. Got to enjoy a little Boxing Day and Premier League action to help keep me occupied, and a lot of MLS and U.S. national team news to keep me distracted instead of thinking about how cold my toes were.
Yeah, it's been quite a... Well, I guess it's all through the country except for various pockets, like, I guess, California.
Juan Arango and his crew down in Florida are living the good life right now. I think it's 50 degrees.
Yeah, that's good life compared to here in Delaware. I think, I mean, the lowest we got was right around, I think, zero. But my parents live in northern Pennsylvania, and they were at, like, I think it's at minus 15 at one point. So they, it's... And I think I'm a fan of Buffalo teams. For the listener at home, not soccer, but in other sports, and I believe they were getting mauled with a blizzard yesterday. So fun times.
Whereas usually it's just the Buffalo football team that's getting mauled.
Yes. So anyway, we're recording. Like I said, it's Wednesday evening, and Wednesday today has been quite a. You know, speaking of, I mean, Toronto isn't too far from Buffalo, and Toronto seems to be going all in on this. And I think people thought with Tim Lewicki coming over from Los Angeles that, you know, that would be something that would happen. And so finally he's gotten his man, or it sounds like, and actually maybe two men. And this could rock the world as far as MLS and even U.S. soccer to an extent. I think there's a lot of stuff going on. But so, Robert, first of all, Jermaine Defoe, one of your favorite players at Tottenham, you being an Arsenal
You think
supporter,
that they would need him over there since they can't score.
Yeah.
Or
but,
do much of anything right now.
That's true. But I guess he is on his way to MLS. He will be in Toronto at TFC. I think they're getting ready to introduce him in the next couple of days. Yep. As that transfer having gone through. What do you think of that?
Well, I mean, this has been a rumored deal for a while now. This didn't just come out of the blue. In fact, I think even late last season, this is something that had been rumored to be in the works. Obviously, anytime you have somebody of Defoe's credentials come over to the league, it's quite a nice get for the league and for the team that he's going to, in this case, Toronto. You know, Toronto definitely had some problems scoring last year. Robert Earnshaw was supposed to be the big acquisition overseas that would come in and help their scoring woes. That didn't work out, you know, and others. But this is basically the big target man that this team needed. I mean, obviously they have other needs, but a nice get for them, a nice way to sell jerseys. It's a nice lift for a team that probably needs a lift, just in terms of a fan base that's been long, long abused and long ignored. So, you know, it's a typical European star coming over to MLS. He's older. You know, we'll see what his motivation is. We'll see what he has left to contribute. We'll see if he's more Thierry Henry than Freddie Ljungberg. It's a no lose for Toronto. I think they have the money. They need the star power, so why not go get him? And I think in the long term, this could be a good deal. Now, the key remains, what are they going to do around him? And we'll talk a little bit more about this in a few minutes, but what are they going to do around him to give him those opportunities to score? I saw on Twitter today somebody was I think, quoting a newspaper in Toronto, quoting an unnamed front office person that said, oh, we really think that he could provide 30 goals for us next season, maybe even 40. So it's curious to see, as they build the team around him, what the expectations are going to be for him, and you know, what he's able to contribute with the other players on the team. So it's a good deal, but there's more to be seen with this acquisition.
Yeah, well, and I also think there's some, you know, I'll bring up the other acquisition that's being rumored shortly, but one of the things that came out in the Toronto Star, they're throwing around a $50 million figure, which pretty much blows pretty much every MLS team out of the water.
And that's, it's absurd, absurd number.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's a lot of thoughts about, you know, what is this going to mean for, like, the CBA? You know, what's this going to mean? You know, and you know, that's a great question. I mean, you've got guys making under 50 grand a year in MLS right now. I mean, Clint Irwin was a case that was profiled last year and kind of the typical guy who, you know, he won the starting goalkeeper job in Colorado after, I believe it was Matt Pickens went down with an injury. And so he took over and did an admirable job, and he was basically making the league minimum salary, which, you know, compared to what Defoe is going to be making is, you know, peanuts. I don't know what Defoe's actual salary is going to be, you know, wage, so to speak, but the $50 million was bantered about as the probably the total between the transfer and his salary, I'm guessing, over the, I guess, what, 3 years or 4 years or whatever.
So. As we saw with Clint Dempsey, there's ways that these are structured where it's not all one, you know, it's not all as large as it seems to be because it's spread out over years and in different pockets and things like that. But still, it's a pretty obscene number. And, you know, it raises questions about, and this is something that I harp upon constantly on the show, the league's financial planning, the league's financial thought process, because, you know, $50 million can go a long way towards doing a lot of things. For example, how much would some of the fans in Toronto love to have their ticket prices lowered after going up year after year to watch bad teams? You know, how much would $50 million help some of these struggling teams out there, Columbus, Chivas, D.C., New England, to help set up their financials behind the closed doors? You know, is somebody like a Jermaine Defoe worth the league spending that much money, if that's the total amount? I'm not 100% sure it is, but, you know, an obscene amount of money. Is it worth the league to get one player who was on the downside of his European career when it could be doing a lot more to prop up the competitive nature of the league? I don't know.
Right. I mean, you know, you have a couple of examples you can look to in MLS that, you know, obviously your Thierry Henry is a guy who came over. Granted, I think he had proven at one point he was still at that elite level. You can't even argue that Jermaine Defoe was ever at his level. So,
nope.
You know, to compare those two guys is kind of like, that's a pretty unfair thing to do for Thierry Henry. But,
yes.
You know, you start talking about Robbie Keane, and there's another name that is somewhat closer to what you might think of Jermaine Defoe. You know, Keane had kind of washed out of the Premier League. He was actually with Tottenham, I believe, before he came over to the States.
Yes, he was.
And, you know, he's fared pretty well for the Galaxy. Yeah. I mean, granted, Keane had Beckham and Donovan there as two prime attacking players that were helped set him up for goals. So, you know, that helps Keane out. You know, will Toronto be able to, you know, afford to have that type of, you know, they just brought in this young forward, Gilberto, I believe it was his name, from Brazil. You know, I don't know if he's a guy that's going to set up Defoe. You know, you just wonder if they're doing this right. And, you know, that might also link into this next name we're going to throw out. But let's finish off with Defoe. You know, what do you think? Do you think he's going to be a 25-goal scorer for Toronto? Do you think he can do that? Do you think that's realistic, or what do you think? Do you think it's going to be more like maybe the 10 to 15 to start?
I think the way this team is constructed right now, I think he's more of a 10 to 15. I mean, again, he'll create his own shots in certain circumstances, but if this midfield can't get him the ball, then I don't see him having as many opportunities. I mean, obviously, he's more talented, like I said, than somebody like a Robert Earnshaw, so he'll be able to create his own chances. But, you know, this team needs to improve all around in order to get him those scoring chances. Right now, I set his ceiling at 15 just due to the team around him. But if Toronto's smart and they spend some money in the right places, then he could get up to a 20-goal score. I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility.
I'll tell you what. I threw out Robbie Keane, who's also probably, that's one of the success stories in MLS.
Big time.
You could also throw out someone like Kenny Miller, who... granted, he wasn't in the Premier League at the point of his transfer, but he's a guy that took quite a while to get kickstarted. And even then, I'd say, based on the fact he was a DP, mm-hmm. he probably was not earning what they were, producing at the level that, he was being paid. And so, you have those types of extremes, and there's probably even more than that. What will Defoe be able to do? Let's throw out the other name, Michael Bradley. This is a real hot button, I think, for most of us, and because Michael Bradley's 26 years old, he plays at one of the better clubs, I would say, in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously doesn't have the power of Juve or any of the top, Premier League teams or Bayern Munich or Barcelona or any of those types of clubs, but Roma's sitting right there. Behind Juventus, they were going to end up in the Champions League most likely, unless they have like an epic collapse, probably. This was what we were led to believe is what Michael Bradley wanted. And yeah, he ended up on the bench quite a bit now. And so that's playing into this. But now he looks like he may be transferring to Toronto. It looks like started out in Dempsey territory as far as like the rumor mill. And then as the afternoon progressed, it just sort of like ballooned, and then there were some confirmations, and then I think Grant Wall recently put out a tweet that said that it was still not quite a done deal, but it's close or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't really mean to ask this as a question. It's just, tell what your thoughts are. I mean, there's a lot of different aspects to this, whether it be for MLS, whether it be for Toronto, whether it be for the men's national team, Bradley himself. I mean, there's just so many different levels that you could take this conversation. What do you think?
Talk about a smorgasbord of a conversation.
All
right, so let's take this piece by piece here. I want to start with the sarcastic, which is I was exchanging tweets with Total MLS today about the fact that I guess this is the latest iteration of the Dempsey rule because good old DC United is sitting first in the allocation order. And Toronto is not, so I'm assuming that because he will be a designated player if he signs, they get to skip that whole process. See Dempsey, Clint, / Seattle Sounders.
True.
There's also the funny thing that the MLS transfer window isn't open, but let's just set that aside. Let's take Michael Bradley himself. What does this do for his career if he comes to Toronto? I think this really stunts it. I mean, really what you saw with Michael Bradley, even though he had been losing playing time in Serie A, is a young player who is developing into a world-class international. There's very few world-class internationals on the United States national team. Let's not overrate that here. We're talking about a guy who could probably come in and compete if he was born in, say, Yorkshire or Munich or, maybe not Munich, but, Lille or Milan. I mean, this is a guy who could at least compete for a national team slot on other teams. He's that good. He's not world class in terms of a Lionel Messi, but he's a good, solid central midfielder who a lot of teams can benefit from having. By coming potentially to Toronto, you're now setting yourself up where you're not playing the top competition. And we said this with Clint Dempsey, but not playing the top competition at a time when really he should be going up against the best teams and players that he can. Without a doubt, he is the most integral player on the U.S. national team, except for maybe Howard, maybe Dempsey. I'd argue Michael Bradley is the most important player on the U.S. national team, just because when you've seen the U.S. national team without him, it's a much different team, and it doesn't have that steel spine in the midfield. So I think he's taking himself out, and even if this is a loan deal or whatever, really he's depriving himself of the opportunity to improve himself at an age when he should be playing against the best competition he should be playing against. So I think that's a problem. I don't know if you want to respond to that before we move on to the next topics. But I think that's a big thing. I think this is horrible for him when he should be playing in Europe against the top competition.
Well, yeah, but, you know, it's really tough to, you know, the toughest part about it is according to, I believe it was ESPN FC's report where they, you know, kind of leaked this, you know, unofficially, you know, they listed his salary at Roma to be, I think, 800,000 euros per year. So, you know, and what they're talking about Toronto paying him per year is $6.5 million.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you look at this from Bradley's standpoint, and it's like, I mean, the guy is getting paid, you know, 4 to 5 times. I don't know what the exchange rate is currently, but I think...
I think it's a dollar and a half or something.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, he's going to be getting paid considerably more to live in a city that is probably much cleaner. Well, I don't know if it's much cleaner.
I wouldn't go that far. Let's not go. let's not start slamming Roma, maybe, Alexi Lalas.
Maybe much safer. I don't know. I mean, you know, it's tough to tell. I've never been to Europe. I've been to Niagara Falls. I've never been to Toronto.
I've been to both, and I think anybody that says Toronto is a much better city is crazy.
Okay. Closer to home, I think you could say that.
Closer to home.
Then again, his father is now, and I guess we probably ought to talk about that later. But
spoiler alert.
Is it stay back there in Norway now coaching. But, you know, theoretically, probably closer to family. You know, and that's, you know, in a whole other aspect, let's get to that later. I tend to agree with you. You know, I think Klinsmann wants to see guys challenging themselves, and I'm not sure this is ever going to be considered challenging yourself, going to a league on your own continent with the general match play being much weaker than what you would get in Serie A. Now, the other aspect of this is he wasn't getting a whole lot of time at Roma. You know, I think I saw he had played in 11 of 17 matches or something to that effect, and that he only started, I think, 5 of them. So they just transferred in another fellow that was going to probably jump ahead of him in the pecking order in the central midfield. So, you know, it was clear that he was on his way out. The question is, you know, has Toronto basically flooded a market with so much money that basically all all Bradley would say is, oh, I've got to take that money, even though, you know, let's say Tottenham was willing to give him, let's say in dollars, $3 million a year. Well, Toronto's going to give him 6.5. Okay, well, we're going to take that because it's obviously a better deal. And, you know, maybe he feels more comfortable on the North American continent as opposed to in England or wherever he might end up. I don't know. It seems like a step back.
What you're talking about is an NASL model, and I'm not talking about 2014 NASL. I'm talking about 1970s NASL, where it's chasing the top talent with top dollar. Again, and as you said, flooding the market and creating an unstable player market.
Yeah, I mean, and let's...
Or an arms race, even.
Right, I mean, let's think about it from this standpoint. I mean, when you look at a Toronto match last year, I mean, did you really see a full stadium?
Nope.
No. So you're talking about, you know, yes, Maple Leaf Entertainment or Enterprise, whatever they call themselves. I forget what the name of it's called. Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment. I think that's the name of it, MLSE. They have lots of money. That's for certain. And they can spend it however they want. But, you know, if you want to create a model where you're saying there's going to be equity or equality, let's say, within the league, I mean, you're not seeing that with this. I mean, you could argue with the Galaxy that you have a market that has a pretty heavy saturation of, you know, Hispanic viewers that would probably be interested in watching soccer, whether it be American or Mexican or wherever. You know, you're going to have – that's a decent market for that, even if you don't sell out the StubHub Center. But – so you can argue putting, you know, guys like Beckham and Donovan, et cetera, and paying a lot of money there. In Seattle, you have – what are they averaging? 45,000 fans a game, I think, or something like that.
Something like, yep.
Maybe just south of 40. I don't know. I can't remember the exact number.
A lot.
I'm not going to look it up. Toronto, you don't have that. And yes, Toronto's a big city, but you know, they haven't proven themselves to be a soccer town. And so you know, it just looks as though this is a boondoggle. If they succeed and they start selling out, you know, BMO Field every game and it's a great deal, then, you know, yes, then it maybe, then you can say it's a success. You know, if TSN up there is getting great ratings for the games and basically they become the top team in Canada, they go and, you know, let's say win the CONCACAF Champions League. Yes, then we can say, gee, that was a boon of a move. And, you know, you've got this team, TFC, that's now one of the top in the league. Now, if it goes under, which has happened many times in Toronto, then you're going to look at this and say, yeah, how close is this to what we saw in the 70s and 80s mm-hmm. with the North American Soccer League in its original, like you said. So, yeah, I mean, there are those concerns.
Although I would push back. I think Toronto is actually a very good soccer town. I think that their ownership, the previous ownership, had just been terrible to them. I mean, mistreated the fans immensely. Okay. Poor investments, raising ticket prices like crazy. I mean, I think it's a pretty good soccer town. I wouldn't be surprised to see an uptick in attendance if both these deals were worked out.
Well, but, you know, I think the U.S. and in Canada, for the most part, the cities are good soccer towns. I think MLS tends to undersell their teams, and for whatever reason.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe that has to do with salary cap. Maybe that has, you know, there's a number of different reasons.
Although, that. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, so let's just go one more facet, and then we'll take a break.
Can I bring up one other point here, talking about selling out? So we have three big acquisitions by Toronto. Would Jermaine Defoe by himself sell out BMO Field? I would say no. Would Michael Bradley by himself sell out BMO Field? I'd say no. Would Dwayne D. Rosario, the third acquisition, sell out BMO Field by himself? No. But I think that you'd bring more people to the. I think he's going to bring more people to the stadium than the other two, as a Canadian player.
And I mean, we were talking about having someone doing the table setting, and you know, Di Rosario can do some of that. So
I wouldn't go that far.
Yeah,
he's getting up there. I believe me, I've seen it.
Sure, but you know, all in all, you know, if Bradley becomes more of an offensive weapon than what we've seen in his European stint. You know, can Ryan Nelson use him in a way that's going to, you know, promote that? I don't know. But you speak of Di Rosario. That's the other thing that pops to my mind with regards to this is the salary structure. And, you know, Dwayne Di Rosario has paid his dues with an MLS. I think at DC United, he either restructured his contract or was bought down to the point where he wasn't a DP anymore.
He was allocated down, basically, yeah.
Yeah, so now you have, you know, two DPs come in. You know, they're going to be the focal. You know, he probably was thinking that, gee, you know, if they don't bring anybody else in, I'm going to be, you know, kind of the focal point of this team for the most part. I mean, they did bring in Gilberto, but now, you know, how much time will he get on the pitch? You know, is he going to be in the starting 11 half of the games? I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I guess he could be a second striker for Ryan Nelson in sort of a 4-4-1-1. I think DC tried to do that, and I think they kind of ran out of ideas when Leonard Pajoy didn't.
And everybody else, the other dead weight.
Carlos Ruiz. Yeah. So when we return on the United States Football Show, we will talk some about the January camp for the United States men's national team. And there are some other moves. Yes, other moves in MLS, not just Toronto-based. And, you know, there is a super draft coming up. I'm not sure how much we're going to talk about that. But lots of stuff going on, even though it's the offseason. This is the United States Football Show, sponsored by Simply Football and World Football Daily. And we're back on the United States Football Show. Earl Reed here with Robert Hay. The first show of the new year. I think we're going to call this season 2 because I like Netflix. Because
we got renewed for a second season. Can we put out a trailer that everybody talks about on the internet?
Yeah, and I got double the pay.
Sweet.
Yeah.
I signed a long-term deal from the beginning. I'm not getting an increase this year.
Actually, now that I've heard that for you, I actually got my salary tripled. So.
Oh, nice.
It's actually the same as double.
Gotcha. Damn it.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Yeah, so anyway, the music you just heard was the B-Side Shuffle, and we like to plug them because they've allowed us graciously to use their music in our in between our segments, and you know, we find their music relatively pleasing to our ears, and we like to support, you know, the grassroots music effort, which is
and they
so
are
good. So,
blowing up as we speak. So by listening to this podcast, you're getting in on the ground floor. You can be very hipster with them and just be like you were a fan of the B-Side Shuffle.
So yeah, bsideshuffle.com. Or I'm sure they're on Twitter as well. Go check them out, and it's probably B-Side Shuffle or something. But they're good stuff. Anyway, United States men's national team will start segment two. The roster was released recently for the January camp, which in the past was affectionately known as Camp Cupcake. And, you know, even though it still is, I think this is quite a bit less cupcake.
It's Camp MLS, let's be honest. It's all MLS players.
It's more like Camp, you know, Fudge Brownie or something. You know, it's a little more cultured, let's say. Maybe some, you know, some walnuts on top, or you know, like a little drizzle of something or other. But anyway, goalkeepers. We got, you know, four usual suspects: Tally Hall, Bill Hamid, Sean Johnson, Nick Raimondo. Oh, and just to preface this by saying, I think everybody but one player is an MLS player. So you can guess which one later after I name these all, Robert, okay?
I'm trying to figure it out right now.
Okay. Defenders are Matt Beisler, Brad Evans, Omar Gonzalez, Clarence Goodson, Michael Harrington, who I think is a new name.
Yes.
Out of Portland. Chris Clute, another newcomer from Colorado. Chance Myers. And Sestanovic, both from Sporting Kansas City. They've probably been in the system before, but I'm not 100% sure. But maybe not. Shane O'Neill, Colorado. Have a little tidbit about him later. DeAndre Yedlin from Seattle Sounders, youngster, a homegrown player from up there. Those are the defenders. Midfielders are Eric Alexander, kind of a head scratcher for me, but he's been called up to the team before, I guess. So Kyle Beckerman, Brad Davis, Mix Diskerud, Benny Failhaber, Luis Keel, Dax McCarty, and Graham Zusi. And your forwards are Landon Donovan, Eddie Johnson, Mike McGee, first call-up for him. I've been waiting for that, MLS MVP. And last year's MVP, Chris Wondolowski. So, did you figure it out?
I did. And it would be, obviously, Mix Diskerud, although that might change within the next year, so.
Yeah. Well, he was rumored to go to Portland, I think, last offseason.
Mm-hmm. So. Exactly. Allocation and all that.
He's at Rosenborg. Mm-hmm. I believe that's also in Norway.
Correct.
So, you know, the reason that it's MLS players is MLS is on break. Norway's on break as well. They have that whole winter thing like we do, and so.
One of the few things we have in common with Norway.
Yeah, I wish we had Northern Lights, though. That would be so sweet to be able to see those. But anyway. Instead we get the polar vortex. Well, they get the polar vortex too, probably.
So let's talk about some players, shall we?
Yeah. The one thing I was going to say about Shane O'Neill that was pointed out by my editor at Philly Soccer Page, Dan Walsh, he was actually being courted by the Irish national team. So this was sort of a potential, you know, let's sink our teeth into him before he bolts for Ireland, because I think Ryan Mira was capped by Ireland recently. So,
God knows anyway, the Irish need the help, so maybe we should just let him go and go help that poor Irish national team.
Supposedly he has family that was into Gaelic football as well, so that's...
I believe it.
Yeah, so anyway, so what we were saying about players, what do you want? Who do you want to talk about first?
You want to go position by position here and see if we approve of the selections?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, let's just start with goalkeepers. I really don't think there's much of an argument here. These are the top four call-ups for MLS. I mean, Raimondo's in the mix for number two spot, I think, on this team. Tally Hall, I think, has been a long you want to move on to defenders here?
Sure.
I mean, I hate playing the national team game because there's always someone that, or a couple people that are left out that I don't remember. But, I mean, this is pretty straightforward, I think. I don't think you're going to see a lot of playing time for some of these players. I was surprised to see two guys from the Rapids, Michael Harrington from Portland. I mean, not exactly known for their defensive prowess up there in Portland this year. But overall, I mean, I guess if you're bringing in players, you know, that are from MLS, I don't know. Who are they missing? Who else could they have brought in that was a defender from MLS that was an American national?
The one that was really debated strongly, and it's going to sound like I'm being a homer, but a lot of people were saying it was Moby Okugo.
Homer.
Yeah.
He should get on this team just for his tweet about the Michael Bradley situation today.
Oh yeah, that was quite. Well, he's not going to the Union, so.
No.
But, Okugo had a pretty good year, and the thing that's unfortunate with him is that he's been kind of shoehorned into a defender role because the Union are short on defenders, and John Hackworth loves what Brian Carroll does in the defensive midfield, so
he doesn't.
Okugo has been basically pushed into that kind of role, and he's done well there. But with Shane O'Neill getting called up, and the other thing about this is you have a lot of first teamers, and mainly that's because they're from there are a lot of first teamers in MLS. But you get Matt Beisler and Omar Gonzalez as two center backs. You probably aren't going to see a Moby Okugo taken. Once you get and Clarence Goodson there, too. He's another starter at times. So there's room for one, maybe two. And, you got Shane O'Neill. I guess they wanted to cap him. The other thing about this list that is quite telling, all of the teams that have been selected here within the last 2 years have made the MLS playoffs.
Hmm.
I don't know how much that plays into Klinsmann's thinking. I was in the middle of writing an article over the last couple of days, and I'm still trying to formulate that. But it's like, it's like that quote or cliche, whatever you want to call it, the rising tide lifts all ships.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you saw last year Steven Betashore and Justin Morrow got called in from San Jose when San Jose was, Supporter Shield winners. This year you see Colorado make the playoffs, where you get Chris Klute, who was sort of like I consider him the Borussia Dortmund of left backs. It's like, this hipster choice that, he's like the best ever. It's like, well, he just came up this year. But I guess he's played pretty well. But, you also got Shane O'Neill from Colorado. It's like, you're doing something right if you're in the MLS Cup playoffs. So, let's pull you into the camp.
So basically,
I don't know if that's...
you're saying Jurgen Klinsmann's a front runner?
I don't know if it's that, but maybe there's something to be said for guys who help their teams win, and DC United 2 years ago was in the Eastern Conference Finals, so
sure.
You could, for Bill Ameed and, Eddie Johnson came from Seattle. So, that's clearly why, where he got, he's been in the national team picture for on and off for quite a while now. So what about midfielders?
Glad to see that Mix got called back in. Surprised that Benny Fellhaber got called back in. He didn't exactly have a great season supporting Kansas City, up and down. Dax McCarty getting called in. I mean, that's Daniel Forrestein, friend of the show. Daniel Forrestein must have been just sobbing this morning when this was announced, because that's like his dream call-up. I think he's the one that's going to lead them to World Cup victory. Eric Alexander, also very odd, but, again, it looks a lot like you said with the defenders. New York won the Supporter Shield, so they get two midfielders in the national team system for the national team call-up. It's an interesting mix. I'll be a homer for a minute. I think Perry Kitchen at some point would probably deserve a call up with maybe a Camp Cupcake just to see if he's ever going to be a senior team possibility. I know he's played for the U23s, U21s. He's becoming up to the system. I'd love to see him mix it up with the big boys. And there's others like that throughout, but I think, you know, in this case, like you said, you make the playoffs, you make the team. And that's why I think guys like Alexander McCarty and Fellhaber were called up.
Yeah, I mean, I think largely this is a pretty indicative list of who is, at the top of the MLS charts. You know, you might have a couple that are, as far as Americans go, you might have a couple that you could argue. Kellen Rowe had a pretty good year up in New England. Lien Wen also, I think, has, some people were looking for some love for him, maybe. I mean, obviously, McInerney was in the Gold Cup roster, but he sort of fell off the map at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The other defender from the Union that was being mentioned was Shannon Williams. I think Soccer America listed him as the number one right back in MLS. So, not that – I mean, we saw what Soccer America and U.S. Soccer did with their, all-time 11. They seemed to miss a lot of names from the early – half of the last century. So, you can't do it all right. So, I mean, you're not gonna be able to get it all right. And one of the other things that's happened is the mid-February date for FIFA, the friendly date was removed. So there's like one fewer friendly dates before this World Cup. So I think that's why you're seeing more first teamers in this, call up than what you had in the past. Plus, there's just a lot of first teamers in MLS anymore. Let's just move on to some transfer news or loan news.
We're just going to skip over the forwards? Did I miss that discussion?
Oh, I guess, yeah. You said something about a homer. Did you talk about Eddie Johnson?
I mean, EJ, no matter who he's playing for, has probably served a call up at this point. I mean, he's a fringe Brazil player. So
the only one that really stands out as far as forwards goes, Mike McGee, that's hasn't been in the team. And I think we both agree that him leaving the Galaxy was probably one of the most lopsided trades that you're going to see in MLS maybe ever.
Yeah.
And so
not involving allocation money. Yep.
And other forwards, trying to think, there aren't a whole lot of, Robbie Finley. I mean, I don't know. I mean,
I'm on the record as saying I think Chris Wondolowski's not a national team player, but I can understand the call up.
I mean, Will Bruin maybe,
no.
But he didn't have the greatest of years this year either.
No.
You could say Kenny Cooper.
No.
I mean, he's getting up there in age. You start thinking through all of the American forwards that you have at your disposal, and it gets kind of thin. Mm. I mean, Andrew Wenger didn't have a great year. Trying to think of the other teams that have Americans at the forward position. Deshaun Brown, I'm not even sure that he would. I'm not sure he'd play for U.S.
No.
Soccer. Excuse me. Even if he did get called in. Like I said, Finley has been in the team on and off. So, I mean, it's kind of thin as far as, the forwards that you have available to you. Anyway, any other thoughts on this?
Nope. It's a friendly team. It doesn't really mean anything except for the guys who make the case for getting a second look.
So, real quick, Clint Dempsey goes to Fulham on loan. I don't think he has done anything particularly monumental just yet for them, but I guess that's to try to jumpstart his.
If the whole reason for him going on loan is to jumpstart his production and form,
yeah.
Then why the heck did he move to MLS in the first place? I mean, now you're playing a guy during a break on loan. He's going to come back and play in MLS. And then he's going to go to Brazil. I mean, he ain't young. Let's hope that he doesn't get tired out ahead of Brazil here. I mean, some of these guys need a break at some point. He's not a spring chicken anymore.
Right. One of the other transfer items that came across was Aaron Johansson. It sounded like Stoke City was interested in his services.
That's my head going against the table.
No, it isn't.
Sorry, edit that out. But that was my head going against the table.
That's okay.
Stop.
But it's not your head. Actually, do your head. I want to hear it.
I don't want to suffer brain damage, but which is what going to Stoke sounds like. Haven't we seen enough U.S. national team players go to Stoke, not get playing time, and have to find playing time elsewhere? Just Aaron Johansson, just stay where you are. Keep playing well.
Yeah, fine. I mean, you talk about Maurice Adu.
I don't understand why non-English leagues are hated by American soccer fans. I mean, if it's not La Liga or the Premier League, it's an inferior league. I mean, there's other leagues out there, folks, that are good and have quality, and you can get playing time and improve yourself that aren't MLS, the Barclays Premier League, or La Liga. So, you know, just accept that sometimes a player can improve himself, you know, the championship or, you know, in the Eredivisie. I think I pronounced that correctly, somewhat. Ligue 1, Serie A.
Yeah.
Come on, people.
Better than some pronounce that.
Diversify your worldview. Open an atlas. Come on. Sorry. I get off my soapbox.
I agree with that. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, and I don't – you know, I mean, it's – I wouldn't say, like, Norway is going to be one of your top – but, you know, you've got plenty of leagues in, you know, Western Europe that qualify as – good destinations to improve your skill and play against, you know, players that are going to prepare you for, you know, international play. Like you said, Spain, England, Italy, Germany, Holland, Belgium to an extent. Portugal is probably better than Belgium for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
France.
You know, Terrence Boyd's in Austria. I don't know if that's a, you know, a top league, but you know, you've got quite a few there. Yeah. You said France. Yeah. I mean, I guess I always miss France.
I know. It's okay.
It's cause I forget Paris. See, that's for your movie.
That's for the movie side of things. Yes.
Yeah. So, and, I guess, so we were talking about how Americans seem to revere the Premier League above all. Jose Altidore has been struggling mightily at Sunderland and, you know, any other, you know, this, it just seems like it's going from kind of like from bad to worse for the national team. As far as, you know, we look like over the summer, we had all these guys playing well and, you know, Josie had started to fade a little bit with, you know, Alkmaar towards the end of the season, but, you know, he got like, he scored a hat trick. I forget if it's against Germany or what it was in that friendly.
It was against Bosnia.
Or somewhere along the way.
Mm-hmm. Huh? Against Bosnia, wasn't it?
Bosnia. Okay, yes. Sorry, I couldn't remember. But, you know, it looked like he was still kind of carrying on there. But, you know, between Dempsey coming back and Josie and, you know, and just, you know, seeing a lot of players not going to Europe as opposed to staying in MLS, you know, you just feel, you know, it just gives you a little bit of, not a depressing feeling, just like a little bit of anguish. Like maybe this just isn't going well, but you know, maybe this is going to help out MLS as far as those guys go. But let's get back to Josie.
I think you raise a good point in regards to Josie. Here's my thoughts on Josie. I mean, you've got to remember the guy's still pretty young. I mean, he's not as young as we think he is sometimes, but he's still pretty young. He's playing for a team that is doing very poorly, bottom of the table, I believe, right? And has already gone through one managerial change. They've gone through some turmoil in terms of management. He's playing his first year in a new league, which is very different style than the league he had played in. He's come off a year where he played international duty. His off season was playing with the national team, you know, so he's not getting a lot of breaks. Whereas in the past, you know, he might've gotten left off the national team. He might've sat on the bench and, had a little bit more downtime. So all these factors are really conspiring to not help his current form. You know, I've mentioned this on past shows. To a better league, let's just say better league for simplifying things, often go through a year to year and a half adjustment to the league. So it's not uncommon for players to come from other leagues and go to the Barclays Premier League or another top league and struggle for a bit to get used to the style of play. So, you know, if Josie's still playing like this next year and you know, his team's still in the Premier League, then I think you have to worry. And if it carries over to the national team, I think you have to worry. But I think in terms of his club form, yeah, it's frustrating, but I'm not incredibly worried. I'm only a little bit worried because it's still an adjustment period and a very tumultuous time over there. So if anything ever got settled, then I think you'd see him start to pick up.
Well, all I can suggest is a loan move to Philadelphia.
Well, that goes without saying.
Yeah. You know, I think the Union can cure his ills. So. Anyway, yeah, things.
I'm not even going to argue with you. I've given up on your homerism.
You know what? What can you say? It's you know, it's just my calling, I guess, to be. You know,
DC United still got like $900 million of allocation money. They could probably pay down a salary to nothing. Come to DC, yeah. Play with EJ.
So the friendly will be February 1st. We'll probably talk before then, but they're playing South Korea out in Carson, California. I don't think that's at Home Depot Center or Sub-Hub Center, whatever it's called. I think that's at the practice facility or something. But it is going to be shown on ESPN2, so
ooh,
we'll be able to watch and see. Yeah. So we'll take our second break, and to close the show, we'll talk some MLS news and just tell you how great it is to be back here in the new year. Looking forward to hopefully some exciting new developments with the podcast and all that good stuff. So we're happy to be here. This is the United States Football Show, and we'll let you listen to some more B-side shuffle as we go to break. Our final segment for our first episode of 2014, United States Football Show. Earl Reed, Robert Hay. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, US of FUTBOL football is the handle for both of those. So, you know, you can do Facebook.com with the slash and then US of football, and you'll find us there. Also, usoffootball@gmail.com is our email address if you want to send us any ideas for topics or just general feedback, positive, negative, middle of the road.
If you want to bump my ego, then by all means, send some positive stuff so I can feel good about myself.
And he's Robert Hay Jr. on Twitter. I'm Earl_of_Reed, a little more complicated with that, but you know, if you type in Earl Reed, you'll probably end up finding me and a number of other Earl Reeds that are on Twitter.
You can also find me on most posters in your local post office.
Nice.
Thank you.
Yeah, and iTunes, if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, then you won't have to do this. But if you don't subscribe, we would like you to subscribe.
And I will personally thank you on Twitter if you subscribe and let me know about it.
That's right. So that's something going for you. Subscribe and you'll get Robert's love.
You get that going for you.
Yes. And if you do subscribe, we would appreciate feedback through the iTunes system because we would love to improve the show and cater to you guys. So let's start off this segment by quoting from Twitter Juan Agudelo. And still, players in MLS making $39,000 a year living off peanut butter and jelly. I could see how he likes the Michael Bradley transfer.
Can't say I disagree with him.
Yeah, well, if there are any doubts as to the way that the... I mean, you have the media that's going to stick with what the league wants for the most part. And then you have players who actually have to live off of an uncompetitive wage in most standpoints. Anyway, yeah. Some other news from MLS. We've got some transfers in and out and otherwise. It sounds like, I didn't write this on our agenda, but from Seattle, Freddie Montero, and from Philadelphia, Carlos Valdez, those transfers away are getting worked out. Both those players have been on loan, I believe, trying to get into the Colombian national team picture for Brazil World Cup. And so, I forget what I saw for Valdez. It might be I don't want to speculate. I can't remember. I don't have the tweets in front of me, but there is some stuff going on with them. So, anyway, why don't you go ahead and talk about DC United and what they've done? We already talked a little bit about what's happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was a busy offseason for DC United. The first thing they did was they were finally able to exploit the loopholes in the MLS rulebook and trade for Eddie Johnson. You know, if I'm a fan of another team, if you're a non-DCU fan and you're upset about this deal, I kind of agree with you. I mean, basically, DC United sent over the mysterious allocation money for Eddie Johnson. Seattle didn't get anything else. So it's kind of a shady deal to begin with, but, you know. Eddie Johnson wanted out of Seattle so he could get paid. He is going to probably get paid in DC. I believe that they are paying his salary for this year with the promise to renegotiate to DP money. I'm sure with Michael Bradley's deal and Jermaine Defoe's deal, the price just went up. So good get for DC United, I think. You know, provides an aerial presence and a big, tall striker up front. I like him. I don't see him as, like, being the best striker in MLS with DC United, but I see him as being much better than what they had before, considering own goal was their leading scorer last year. He's a good third striker, a good young prospect.
Speak that again, because I had a little bit of hiccup on your line.
Oh, sorry. Connor Doyle was re-signed by DC United. Basically, he had been on loan from Derby County last year. He's a good third striker, young prospect, see what he can come of him. And then in the reentry draft, DC United was busy. In the first go-round, they took Sean Franklin and Bobby Boswell. So they are paying current prices for both of them with a slight raise. And then get Fabian Espíndola and Nan Adekora in the second round or the second day or whatever of the reentry draft. Basically, it's adding more veteran presence throughout the team. I don't know if Espíndola has been signed yet officially. I know there were some issues with that. But I think Sean Franklin's an improvement for a team that desperately needs decent fullbacks. So I think he's an improvement there. Bobby Boswell, I mean, he's a veteran presence. They're remaking their back line, and he's definitely a veteran that'll help play next to Ethan White since Dejan Jakovic is getting sent to Japan. But, you know, it's another one of those things where it's an older guy, which can be alleviated if they use their number one draft pick to get one of these young defenders out of Cal. So it looks like DC United's being very active, spending some money to try and improve what was a abysmally bad team next year. We'll see how all these moves work out. I'm cautiously optimistic for the team, but still see some holes here, especially in the kind of creative midfield slot. So it's probably a lot more of the DC United talk that we wanted to hear, but they've been busy, so that's how I justify it.
Yeah, well, aren't we all busy?
And then the Union did ...
Right, they've gotten Corbin Bone, which is quite monumental.
It'd be awesome if they had Corbin Burnson.
That would be great. And is it Sean Rodet? No, it's not Sean. I can't remember his name. The guy from Psych, the main actor. James Rodet, I think that's his name. And the guy who plays Gus. I don't know, I guess you have never watched Psych, huh?
It's not my show, sorry.
Yeah, so, but I mean, I guess I could have gone all the way back to, like, Major League.
Oh, that's my thought.
Charlie Sheen.
Absolutely. How's your wife and my kids?
See, we have Mr. Movie Podcast here, so he's got all those wild things.
We'll have to talk about best soccer movies one time.
Yeah. I was stalling here a little bit because I wanted to bring up Seattle's move, because it looks like Seattle has actually taken, you know, they got in Dempsey, but they've taken a little bit of a hit here. They did get in some players. They've gotten in Chad Marshall, they probably have needed defensive help for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
They brought in Kenny Cooper, which is probably, Eddie Johnson definitely has aerial ability. You know, Kenny Cooper is a little bit, you know, a little bit more aerial, probably a little less, what do you want to call it? Agile.
I don't know if
he tries to be agile at times, but I don't consider him to be the most. They get Tristan Bowen, Chad Barrett, and Corey Hertzog. He looked all right with Vancouver last, but who they've lost? They've lost Steve Zakuani, who went to Portland. Mauro Rosales has gone to Chivas USA via trade.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Adam Moffat, who they got from Houston towards the end of the season. He was traded out. Not real big deal there, but Eddie Johnson we already talked about, and Michael Gesperning, his option was declined, and I believe Marcus Hahnemann was re-signed, is going to re-sign shortly with Seattle. So, it's some big changes up there. I think they decided that rather than change Ziggy Schmidt, that they would try to refresh some of the guys that have been around a while and who have not fared well in the postseason for them. So kind of a reshuffling of the deck, so to speak. But
yeah, not really convinced, though, with the guys that they're bringing in. I mean, I obviously it's important they needed to do something different, but I mean, besides Chad Marshall, I think it's a nice upgrade. But other than that, it's like, Kenny Cooper, show me something consistent, man. I mean, I don't know. He might help Clint Dempsey, but and the other names you mentioned, yeah, okay. But, you still have a keeper issue, although I guess they're going to settle that with Hahnemann. But I'm just seeing a lot of holes still on this team. And, I think it's almost a lot of almost driving in neutral in some ways, which is crazy to say considering they have Clint Dempsey. But when you don't change your management, it's like, listen, speaking from a DC United perspective, you can change the players on the field. You can add some big names, but if your management that's not getting the job done still in the hot seat, then you've still got problems.
Well, I think what it looks like to me is, you end up having and you may see this in Toronto too, although they've got several. If that does go through, they're going to have several high-priced players. But you get Dempsey, well, it looks like you've got to clear out some room. I mean, they still have, Obafemi Martins.
Mm-hmm.
I guess Shalri Joseph is still probably on the payroll, although, for what that's worth, probably not much. Brad Evans is in the national team setup, but he's sort of
playing out of position.
Kind of a role player, not really a, a utility player. It's not like he's really defined in any. He's kind of a jack of all trades, so to speak. Ozzie Alonso is around, and he's, one of the better defensive midfielders for what he does in the league. But other than that, they've got to make some moves, I think, to refresh and bring in some more attacking talent. Lamar Nagel had a pretty good year, but I venture to say he's probably not going to follow that up with another great year. So we'll see what happens. Like I said, Portland got Steve Zakuani. I'm just trying to go through some of the big name stuff that, we talked about. I mentioned Chivas got Mauro Rosales. They also got Andrew Jean-Baptiste from Portland. That's not, Rosales kind of faded as the year went on, I think. And, I'm not sure if he's built for MLS. He's done pretty well with Seattle, but, this is going to be a real struggle for him at Chivas, I think, just like it is for anybody. Sporting Kansas City gets Andy Greenebaum. I don't know if he's going to be the one that takes over for Jimmy Nielsen.
Good get, though, because, Greenebaum's been a very solid keeper with Columbus, so I thought that was a nice get by them to at least give some competition for that spot. I could see him winning that, and even if he doesn't, he definitely provides some competition for the number one.
And, I guess this would be perfect symmetry. We started off this whole podcast talking about, the Jermaine Defoe, Michael Bradley thing. This is going to be the other end, which is sort of like, I would say right now, the black eye for MLS right now. Just a little bit of a black, not Chivas. Chivas still is a black eye.
That's a black hole.
Yeah. Camilo, who was Golden Boot winner in MLS last season. You know, there's some stuff going on here. He was down in Mexico at Querétaro, and I don't know whether it's just his agent trying to mess with MLS, but basically Querétaro announced Camilo as a new signing of theirs, and yet Vancouver and MLS completely say that he is still under contract. They had option years on him for this year next, and so there's going to be a little bit of a showdown here, and from what I understand, FIFA doesn't look particularly kindly on club option type things, so yeah, this could be a little bit interesting, but the, you know, the other aspect of it is, you know, if a, you know, obviously this player, he's down there at the club getting a physical, you know, he obviously wants to leave Vancouver, right? I mean, or he's trying to renegotiate his salary to get a better contract, it would seem to me. So, I mean, Vancouver is in a really difficult situation right now. You know, you've got the best scorer, you know, their top scorer, the top scorer in the league, who is off, you know, on some kind of, whether it's a publicity stunt, whether it's sincerely looking for another club because he's not happy making what, you know, it's like in the $200,000 range, I imagine. I have to, you know, I can look this up for everybody real quick, but
keep stalling. You're doing a good job while you look it up.
Well, just why don't you talk a little bit about what you think about this and, you know, what this says about MLS.
Yeah, you know, it's you bring up a good point. It's kind of interesting how you have one player. I mean, you and I talked about this off air, and this might be controversial to say, but what if Camilo was a U.S. national team player? Would this even be happening? I mean, setting aside the fact that he would be going to Mexico to find playing time or to play with the team down there. If Camilo's name was Cam Mills or something like that, would this even situation be occurring? No, because MLS would be backing up the Brinks truck, breaking every rule, bending over backwards to accommodate him to make sure that he was happy in Vancouver. He wasn't happy in Vancouver. They'd get a team to give allocation money to Vancouver, and he can go move to LA or whatever team he'd want to play in. So it's kind of interesting that he isn't getting the same treatment, even though really last year, I mean, he was played had a heck of a year, was a bright spot for Vancouver, as you said, Golden Boot winner, and so on and so forth. But still, you know, isn't getting any, I mean, and I know there's contracts and things like that, but still MLS is kind of sitting there saying, you have a deal, you have to stick with it. You can't get out of it. I mean, this is, we're going to hardline you over this, even though if, again, you were a U.S. national team player, I can't imagine them doing that. So it's just an interesting dichotomy to see the different way players are treated by the league.
Right. His salary, what do they call this? Guaranteed compensation for Camilo, $247,000. Obviously, he's, you know, not one of the most destitute players in the league, but, you know, when you look at other leagues in the world, you know, including Mexico, where this club is that he was, you know, it's in League MX, you know, he probably could command, I don't know, maybe three times the salary, maybe two times the salary. I don't know. It's, you know, it just speaks to, you know, a league that is willing to pay guys that, you know, aren't in the league. You know, I mean, you've got guys that have toiled in the league for years, and, you know, Camilo hasn't been in the league a long time, but a couple of years. You know, he proved himself last year, and, you know, just the way, I mean, obviously it's always, you know, you're always going to have players that are in contracts in any league, and, you know, you got to honor those, but, you know, usually you would see, you know, this type of player in another league either get a pay raise because of a breakout year, or you would see another team come in and, you know, pay him a good transfer fee for him in order to get him out of there. And, you know, whether Querétaro just wants to avoid that transfer fee or not, I don't know. But, you know, it's MLS economics, and, you know, I guess we'll have to find out how it plays out for Vancouver, but it's, you know, certainly sounds like he's on his way out. So, you know, because it doesn't sound like he wants to be there. And, Knowing MLS, they probably aren't going to offer him much of a raise out of this. So,
more good news for Vancouver fans who haven't had a lot of good news recently.
That's true. So, any other things that we need to talk about tonight? You think? Can you think of anything else?
We can talk about our feelings.
What about them?
Or not? I have them.
Oh, well, good. I guess I have them too.
That's great.
Well, I guess. Yeah,
good talk.
Just want to say to, I guess we could say it all of you that, you know, we're glad that, you know, you all download this and, you know, we are excited to be continuing this podcast into the 2014 season. You know, we look forward to the future. There may be some things coming down the line where we may have some, you know, platform changes, which, you know, might include some live shows, which would be pretty cool. So, keep our fingers crossed with that. But, yeah, I mean, we're looking forward to this next season of Major League Soccer. Looking forward to the World Cup, which is coming up. You know, hoping the U.S. can actually, you know, pull something out, even though, you know, the odds are stacked against them a bit. But, anyway, we just appreciate all you listening who have listened over the last, what's it been, 9 months, I guess? I guess we started back around May, April or May. So, just it's been a good time, and I'm looking mm-hmm. forward to continuing this year. I don't know what you wanted to add there, Robert, but.
I'll just agree with you. It's going to be an exciting year. I mean, with the World Cup and everything and MLS going to NASL 2.0 and everything else, I mean, there's going to be a lot of stuff to talk about. And I'm looking forward to not only talking with you, Earl, but the listeners, you know, weighing in with their thoughts and comments and, you know, and doing the new fun stuff that we might be doing here.
Yeah, and I think we'll probably at some point get back to a guest or three or two or four or whatever, I mean, over the course of this season. So, you know, we'll have some other people come on here and hopefully, you know, expand your horizons as a listener. Obviously, we have what the All-Star game is going to be in Portland this year, and but
All-Star,
you know,
games, yeah.
You know, it sounds like there's going to be some exciting storylines. You know, you've got Toronto. You know, what's that going to turn out to be? I mean, that could be anything from you know, major failure to maybe supporters' shield. I mean, you know, if they can put it together, you know, the Galaxy are kind of having to rebuild some. You know, like you said, Sean Franklin's gone, and you know they lost Jose Villarreal to. Actually, I guess we didn't even mention those two guys, Jose Villarreal and Michael Farfan, both went south of the border, I believe, to Cruz Azul. So, and I believe there was one other player slipping my mind, but you know, LA's got to do that. You know, can Portland follow up? You know, a very solid year last year, and where I believe they are the ones now going to the CONCACAF Champions League, as opposed to I forget who would have gotten there otherwise. But
yeah, it's a convoluted system.
It was Real. Yeah, it was Real Salt Lake, actually.
Yeah, not
Real
like Salt they deserved Lake. It.
It was going to be the runners up of MLS Cup, but they turned it into the opposing conference winner. So
lame.
Portland will be going to the CONCACAF Champions League. Seattle, a lot of question marks there with, you know, stuff going on. Just a lot of different storylines. And can New York follow up Supporters Shield? So
no.
We will see. But I think you have two votes of hopefully no here. But anyway, I guess that's enough of a half soliloquy, half banter about here, about what we feel about our listenership and about U.S. soccer. It's, yeah, there's never really a dull moment in this. So, even though it's an off season, there's always something going on, the re-entry draft soon. So anyway, Robert, thanks for joining me tonight. Look forward to talking to you again here in a week or so. And hopefully we have some more things to discuss.
Sounds like a plan. Thank you.
All right. So for Robert Hay, this is Earl Reed. You've been listening to the United States of Football Show. And until next time, we hope you take all 3 points.